Welcome to the Trailhead, where trails start and stories unfold. Welcome to the show, everyone. Now here's JD.
Welcome back to the Trailhead, where trails start and stories unfold. You're tuning into the second installment of our Core Conversation series, where we tackle pressing land use issues in and beyond Colorado, featuring insights from Marcus Trusty of Core. Today's episode takes us deep into the wilderness of Colorado, shedding light on the complex battle over land management and access that continues to unfold. In this informative discussion, we dive into the heart of controversies such as the updates on Hackett Gulch, critical revisions to the forest plan for the Grand Mesa, Uncompahgre, and Gunnison National Forest. With Marcus guiding us, we unravel the implications of choosing between alternatives A and D, confront the challenge of mapping inaccuracies, and understand why the Wheelers community voice is pivotal in these scenarios. From the legal mazes surrounding the GMOG forest plan to the persistent struggle for public land access, we cover the spectrum of issues that define the current state of land management. This is not just another episode, it's a journey into the core of what makes our adventures possible and how we can play a part in preserving the balance between conservation and recreation. Prepare to be informed, inspired, and involved in the future of your great outdoors. All right, welcome to the Trailhead, everybody. All right, today we have got Pope and Randy. Pope, Randy, say hello.
Hi.
Unless
Hi,
you everybody. Just froze up and then we lost you.
We did?
All right.
No, you did. We're still here, I think.
You're back there. Okay, there we go.
Hi.
All right. And we've got Jason. Welcome back, Jason. We haven't seen you in a hot minute.
It's been a busy month.
Yeah, it's not going to slow down either, is it?
It should slow down for maybe a week or so, I think.
Well, there you go. Well, by that, and I'm going to be in Vegas, so enjoy the time off. I'm not going to ask you to show up for any more of these.
I will send you $20. Just put it all on red.
Yeah, sure. I'll take it, but I'm not going to tell you if I win.
All right. I come back and they're like, it was black.
It was all black, all of it. And pay no attention to the new lift kit and the new tires and everything else that I got now. All right. And welcome back, Marcus.
Good to be here. Thanks, guys.
All right. So Marcus is back for our core conversation. Last time he was here, we talked about the Hackett Gulch and the gulches and all those trails out here in Colorado. I don't think there's anything new or to update people on those trails other than if you haven't heard that episode and you live in Colorado, especially go listen to it, especially as spring hits. Is there anything new in that realm or arena, Marcus?
Not a lot in terms of trail status, minor update in our legal action. So the litigation that we filed over that issue, our deadline for our initial brief was due on January 22nd in that court case. So we obviously filed that. The agency then has time to respond to that initial brief. That's basically where we lay out everything that was done incorrectly. So we're in the waiting game now where they respond, and then we would have another opportunity to, you know, state facts based on their response. So at this point, it's just kind of a waiting game.
Okay. Cool. If you're familiar or not familiar, rather, with any of the gulch trails in Colorado, check out the Core Conversations episode number. I can't recall off the top of my head, but we'll post it up at thetrailheadnetwork.com. You can also reach out to us at thetrailheadnetwork.com. You can get information on news and information that we got going on, events that we expect to be at. And just if other ways to get in touch with us, if you want to leave Jason a voicemail message, Jason, we haven't had any takers yet. I'm sorry.
I think they're all scared.
I think they might be a little bit. You can be intimidating. 719-408-0132 is the number, and that number and email and the rest of it is all posted at thetrailheadnetwork.com. So with Marcus coming back here, we kind of just wanted to touch base on another big legal one, legal issue that we got going on here in Colorado. And that is the Grand Mesa. We just went over it too. Go ahead, Marcus.
The Grand Mesa, Uncompahgre, and Gunnison National Forest. They are going, or just finished going through a forest plan update.
All right. And for everybody but me, can you kind of give us a little bit of background on where this started and kind of what got us to the more recent updates?
Yeah, sure. So the basic way I like to explain is a forest plan is like a zoning map. So if you think of like a city zoning map that has like a residential zone, commercial zone, industrial zones, just zones overlaid with the city boundary of what you can and can't do, what's allowed in what areas and what isn't allowed. That's basically a forest plan. So a forest plan takes the entire land boundary of the forest. The GMUG, that's what we call it for short here in Colorado, is the GMUG, so we don't get tongue-tied like JD there at the beginning. It's the largest land area forest that we have in the state of Colorado. It is massive. And so a forest plan basically segments out the forest into different zones. So you could have semi-primitive motorized emphasis zones. That's usually where a lot of the motorized roads and trails are. You could have wilderness zones. That's where they manage for wilderness area that's been designated by Congress. You could have special management zones where they're managing for a bunch of different special reasons depending on the terrain. You could have a wildlife management zone. There's a whole list of zones. And so they draw a zoning map over the national forest. Now, the GMUG forest plan was done in 1983, over 40 years ago. And what this process was is to update that plan. Obviously, a lot of things have changed since 1983. So taking a look at what current uses are now, potential future uses, future considerations. And they run a public process. So they ask the public to participate in a forest plan update. Give us your opinion. Give us your feedback. Tell us what you think. What should we emphasize? Where should we emphasize it? And they run their public process. And then they come out. They just came out with a draft decision of what they're going to do. We thought it was a reasonable decision. If you're pro public access, you like to go on public lands, you like to go four-wheeling, or maybe you use your vehicle to access other areas of recreation. And then after a draft decision, if there's anything that somebody would object to, like, hey, I don't think you did this right, or you didn't look at this close enough, or I'm unhappy with this piece of it, you can file an objection. You're part of the objection hearing meeting. That's what took place last week here in Colorado. They'll go through all the objections. The agency has to answer to every single objection that was raised. Maybe they don't change their mind and they just provide further clarification of why they heard you and they're not going to change the forest plan update based on, you know, your objection and the information that you presented. Then you come out with a final decision and that's the forest plan then moving forward. A couple things about it. It doesn't necessarily directly close roads and trails. So we don't usually lose access via a forest plan, but if a zone changed the designation or how we're going to manage it, then in the future we could lose access, or maybe there would be no consideration for expansion or looping trail options or anything like that. So indirectly, it's a big deal for motorized recreation and just public land access. But the base level is it's essentially a zoning map, how the forest is going to be managed into the future based on zones.
Okay. And then, this one, I know there was some, there was a lot of issues. Usually there's what, four or five alternatives for the different plans that they've got going on. And the first one had a lot of issues with it. Alternative A.
Yeah. So, most of the time in a giant project like this, they'll run alternative A, B, C, and in this case, even D. So they're comparisons. A is supposed to be current management. That's like, if you're going to run a study, that's your control. What are we doing right now? What do we know? That's supposed to be alternative A. And then what are we proposing to do would be alternative B, C, and D. And how do those compare against A? And then we weigh the pros and cons and the public comments. Maybe they like one of the alternatives better. Maybe it's blend. You like part of A, which is what we're doing right now. You like part of B, which may change some things. You like part of D, which may change things differently. There were a lot of problems with A, which is current management, in terms of their mapping and their data, where roads and trails are, what the GPS locations of those and the GPS track is. Because if we're drawing, you know, zones around certain things in large land areas, if we don't have the roads and trails dialed in very, very accurately with our GPS technology, we could draw something over top of a road that we don't mean to. And that happened in a number of cases here. The data was not great. And then alternative D, there's a lot of citizen proposals, we call them, that go on here in Colorado. So maybe a group of citizens gets together and they say, hey, we value wilderness, let's say. We think we should expand wilderness management areas. And even though wilderness is only designated by Congress, we're going to advocate that they should increase that and the forest should recognize, you know, our desire to increase it. So they get together, they form a citizen panel. Maybe they're part of a county. Gunnison County did this. You know, they're a single county in the GMUG National Forest land area. And they say, we want the Forest Service to do this. And they advocate for their position. And they feel that they have stronger advocacy because they're a citizen group. They say, we had a bunch of people involved in this, and we all decided that this is a consensus of what we want. So a lot of different citizen alliances and citizen groups did this. And so the GMUG put them all together. They said, well, if you want all this, we're going to smash all of these desires together from citizen groups into alternative D. And it was a major train wreck because the mapping, the suggestions, you know, we had non-motorized zones that crossed U.S. highways, major county roads, mountain passes that are, you know.
Like, were people submitting like their own GPXs then and their own like tracks?
Not necessarily on that level, because usually these types of citizen proposals are not from on-ground users that use the road and trail system. Otherwise, they were probably
drawing that across a computer, basically.
Yeah. So they get out the maps and they say, we don't think there's anything in this area, or we don't know, so we're just going to draw these big zones that encompass areas and acreage that we want converted to non-motorized recreation or potentially wilderness, let's say. So when all that information comes out, and a lot of times, I wouldn't say always, I don't want to pigeonhole everybody, but a lot of times these are not long-standing residents. Maybe they're people that moved to the area very recently, so they don't have a lot of geographical data and personal experience to go off of.
Right.
So they lumped all these into alternative D, and we looked down through alternative D, and like I said, it was a train wreck. There was lines all over the place. There was no consideration for current uses of how things go. We mentioned this in a couple of the public meetings. So they had some Zoom meetings where we could attend. Patrick, who's been on with me before, specifically asked them about some of these data errors, and The GMUG was very forthcoming. The employees there that were running the process did a very good job. And they said, our intent is not to overlay any type of motorized recreation with a non-motorized zone, or we're not trying to artificially create incompatibility in our forest plan. So they were pretty receptive to our concerns, frankly, and you know, even to the citizens group. I mean, even if their data was wrong, they gave them an alternative. They said, hey, here's alternative D. We'll let the public comment on it. And we did. We pointed out all those inaccuracies. And so a lot of that stuff didn't make it into the final plan, thankfully. And they had some data stuff to clean up. And there's a couple. So two of our bigger trails, JD will know these ones. These are Colorado known, but even nationally, is Taylor Pass and Pearl Pass, major mountain passes. And the Forest Service data had the wilderness boundaries, which get really close to those roads, and those two mountain passes basically define the wilderness boundary in that area. They had them crossing the two passes in a couple different areas. So it would look like we have a road in a wilderness managed zone, which is not true. It's just bad data. And they recognize that, and hopefully through the final plan, they'll correct that.
Meeting about Friday or recently? Or is that something you guys submitted early on?
Correct. We did have that meeting last week. It was Wednesday and Thursday was the objection meeting. And it's over a number of topics. Some of them were mapping errors and the zones. There's a whole host of other ones that they would go through. There are people that object to, they didn't have enough wildlife protections in there. They think there's too much opening for potential mineral exploration, too much opening for future logging or thinning projects. I mean, you name it, people are not happy about it. So there's a laundry list of categories. A lot of them don't really affect us, but certainly we did have the option to talk during our segment about the errors that we noted in the data. And, you know, the person in charge of the meeting asked several questions. So that tells me, one, they heard us and they were definitely interested in gaining more information on those errors. So I think we'll have a positive outcome in this one.
Go ahead, Jason.
I was just going to say, like, you started talking about stuff. Started getting me fired up because I did that for like 10 to 15 years of my Navy career. And as soon as you started talking about the data errors, instantly in my head, I'm like, oh, you got a bunch of people throwing maps out there. They're all looking at a different scale. And yeah, when you start looking at different scales, obviously a latitude and longitude is not going to calculate out to be the same if you're looking at two different scales. So I'm sure that you got people on there that are smart people and they'll figure that out. But if there's not and it hasn't been brought up, Marcus, I recommend bringing that up, that like, hey, when you're drawing these data points, everybody's got to be on the same scale. It's got to be all the data's got to be pulled from the same thing. Otherwise, you're going to have all those data errors.
I think a lot of it's just now starting to get kind of cleaned up and fixed up. Like I know in Colorado, one of the biggest issues that we've had, you know, even since I've started wheeling here 8 or 9 years ago now, it's just getting correct data from different, you know, because there's different sources have all kinds of different tracks, and the technology has changed such now that, you know, I can get something way more accurate on my phone than something somebody could with, you know, 20 years ago with a device that was meant to do it. So it's a different world when it comes to the mapping stuff now. But Marcus, when I was looking at the kind of the documents that they give you for Forest Service plan, and if you're curious about any of this stuff, I'll put some links in the show notes for today where you can kind of go read some of the documents that go along with these forest plans. It's a lot of really boring stuff, if I'm being honest. The comments, the public letters are kind of fun to read sometimes. And they're all posted up there. There were 3,470 something. From your experience, Marcus, do you know if that was like high or low? Do you think that was average for that kind of a plan?
Personally, I think it might be a little bit low. Like, let me give you a comparison. So we talked a lot about the travel management of the Pike San Isabel, and the gulches were part of that. That process elicited over 6,000 comments.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Then I don't feel like that was, I felt better about that yesterday when I read that number.
The only thing about a forest plan, though, is it's hard to get a large number of public comments because we're talking about zones. We're not talking about specific trails. So it would be easier for me to put together a video to solicit public comments to say, hey, you know, these trails are threatened as potentially being closed in this travel management. You know, you can comment to the Forest Service, tell them who you are and why you love those trails and what you like to do out there. And that's easier for the public to get involved that way. Forest planning is, like you said, it's very dry, it's lengthy, it's boring, and in many cases, it's not specific to one trail. So it doesn't garner that level of reaction amongst the public. So while it was substantially less than, you know, like the travel management and the Pike San Isabel here in Colorado, there was a lot of participation from motorized groups, which was positive to see for sure.
Cool. All right.
So how do these forest plans compare to like the BLM's travel plans? What triggers a new forest management plan?
So usually they're supposed to update these every couple decades, but obviously that doesn't happen. So what usually starts to take place, you know, this one was 41 years old now before we have a decision. And this was part in JD's notes, but the next one to happen will be the Pike and San Isabel, and that's from 1984. So that one was 40 years old as well. Really, it takes probably political pressure, public pressure, and internal agency pressure to finally, you know, want to go through this process to update a forest plan, even though it should happen every 10 to 15 years because technology changes, public desires change in 10 to 15 years. It just so happens that, well, it's the government in charge of this, so 10 to 15 years turns into 40 years, and here we are updating forest plans. The Manti La Salle was being updated also, and that's in Utah, so forest in Utah, we commented on that forest plan update too, and it's, you know, ongoing as we speak. So it's kind of a trend around the country to update out-of-date forest plans, and unfortunately, we're doing it all at once across multiple states. And
it almost feels like it was technology kind of triggered. Like when you start to kind of look back at that time frame, it's the early 2000s when that technology started to become readily available to everybody.
Right.
Let me go back to something Jason mentioned, you know, a little bit ago, is about the mapping and the accuracies and stuff. The irony of this whole situation with Forest Service, in some cases BLM too, but we're talking forest in this case, having bad data and not being able to correct it. The correct data exists. And do you know who has it? We have it, the Wheelers. Because I can give you an example. Think of your favorite trail, Pope and Randy, Jason and JD. Think of your favorite trail. I guarantee you, if you close your eyes right now, you can tell me every single rock, turn, obstacle, everything on your favorite trail because you're passionate about that. You love it. So if there were to be a travel plan in your area with your favorite trail, you could walk into that meeting and recite from memory every single thing about the trail system in the area. And we do that same thing here in Colorado. It's a matter of the agency hearing that one and then wanting to correct their data and do something about it too. And there lies a lot of the problem just in human nature.
Yeah. And I mean, and part of it is this, like there's a lot of people that just didn't know that these issues existed before. Right. Like, and I think we found that out from the Moab stuff. There's a lot of folks that just didn't realize what was at stake until it really started, you know, those management plans that we were just talking about that kicked off are really starting to take effect all over the place. There's another one in the San Rafael Swell. Then they just released the plans for that the other day. I was trying to read through that, but that's a mess of paperwork too.
Yeah, so they released some preliminary alternatives and data. That one's not scheduled to formally start till early summer when they would be taking comments. But they are, because what happened with the last one, they're giving the public plenty of time to look at their information before running the official project.
Cool.
Yeah, it's like the barracks area too. Isn't the barracks area in that whole plan?
Yeah, San Rafael. The entire area.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's kind of weird because that area was covered by the Dingell Act already. That was congressionally agreed upon legislation. But
what's, for those not familiar, what is the Dingell Act?
That's what designated, you know, we were talking about some of the labyrinth wilderness area that's on the west side of the Green River. So Congress passed the Dingell Act that essentially set aside some of the zoning stuff, kind of like what we're talking about here. Where's going to be wilderness? Where's going to be opportunities for public recreation? What are we going to honor in terms of existing roads and trails? But it was all set out. And now that same area is going to undergo travel management again through this process that you spoke about that's upcoming.
Okay. And that one concerns me. Like the Swell is one of those places that I think a lot of people haven't really experienced yet. And my fear is that if people don't know and don't know to comment on certain areas or trails, they're not gonna, and we're gonna lose it outright.
Well, and that's a big one in Utah. I think a lot of people do care about that area a lot. Like a lot of people go out there, even people who aren't like crazy off-roaders, they like just want to go like experience that whole area. That area is just gorgeous.
And there's lots of petroglyphs and arches and stuff that's hidden back in that area that you can go drive up to.
What the hell is a petroglyph?
Is an ancient
Indian version of hieroglyphics.
There you go.
Ancient graffiti is a good version of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool spots of that out west that if you're driving along, just search for petroglyphs. You'll probably find something along the highway you can go see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's quite a bit.
No, you're shaking your head no, Jason.
Probably won't do that.
You have better things to do. That's fine. I'm not going to
pay attention to the road. Man.
To each their own. Oh yeah. Well, I wouldn't. Yeah. You of all people shouldn't be doing anything while you're driving except driving.
No. I mean, I live in Washington State, like way close to Seattle. If anybody's been here, they know how people drive. I just witnessed like road rage in front of me, and was just. I don't know why I didn't record it. It probably went viral, but people get out of their cars and start yelling at people. At least they put their four ways on before they got out. And I was like, oh, that's great.
That's
at least you're at least you're putting your four ways on while you stop everybody so you can get out and try to fight the guy next to you. But they were being safe. Yeah. So yeah, I don't have time to look for Petra writing thingies. I don't know.
All right. Fair enough. All right, so Marcus, with the we talked about the mapping stuff and the accuracy piece. So you got what's the next piece then for this particular plan for the GMOG forest plan? The objections are done. The public comment period is over. Correct. All of that's complete. Now we have to wait for their decision.
Correct. So they will sign and render the final decision. Here's what we're doing. The only thing that would take place after that would be if somebody filed a legal challenge to what they're doing.
Okay.
We're not going to do that. I don't anticipate any off-road group doing that. I have no idea what the extreme environmental groups would do, but that is the only other remedy after they issue their final decision would be some form of a legal challenge.
Okay. Has there and I'm not going to ask you to put yourself in a bad spot or anything here, but has there been any kind of major pushback from conservation groups or anything based on the plans that are on the table?
You know, there was a lot of involvement on their behalf at the objections. And, you know, they get pretty riled up. They're very emotional about, you know, their position and they're not shy about it. And they think that we're all going to hell because we're destroying the environment. And they'll tell you that to your face. But whether or not they would pursue legal action over this, I don't know, because the environmental side of it is to say, I'll give you somewhat of an example in hypothetical terms. Let's say they want 20 miles of roads closed. That's our goal. And behind closed doors, they would say, hey, through this process, we want to get 20 miles of roads closed. And then during the process, they'll scream and yell and tell us we need 100 miles of roads closed, right? And they'll stand on the tables and they'll scream about it. And then when 100 miles isn't closed, they look like they didn't get everything they wanted. And maybe we closed 20 miles and that's exactly what they wanted. So
yeah,
sometimes it's hard to read these situations, whether or not they're mad enough to want to pursue litigation or whether they're kind of getting the wilderness expansion that they wanted, even though they were asking for over the moon amounts of it. I'm not really sure.
Go ahead, Jason.
So I know those were hypothetical things, but just for me, if they really wanted the 20 miles closed, they got the 20 miles closed. Well, what are they going to do with those 20 miles? I'm just curious. Just look at it on Google Maps, or what are they going to use it for?
Nothing. They will sleep well at night knowing you can't go there. That's really their goal. And I'm being 100% serious.
And they don't even know.
Yeah, no, I wish you were joking too.
It's like,
yeah.
Come on, there's, yeah, okay. I'm sorry, I just had to bring that up. It fires me up when I hear things like that. Like,
it's something that we have here, and it's something that, and part of the reason why it gets me fired up, and one of the reasons I want to talk about it on our show is because I have seen this stuff firsthand. I have reduced mileage on trails that I have in areas where I've gone out there and been like, well, what exactly was the purpose of taking, you know, a backhoe to this trail and tearing it up for a half a mile? Like, does that really make a material difference in anything? And I think the honest answer is what Marcus was saying, is that the goal in the short term is the 20 miles. And then the next time they'll ask for another 100 and they'll get another 20, and then they'll get another 100. They'll ask for another 100 and they'll get another 20. Eventually they'll get the 100 they wanted in the first place.
They're like Eric Cartman from South Park. They're sitting there. when Cartman bought the amusement park and wouldn't let anybody else in, he slept good night. No one else could go play. Kyle couldn't go to his amusement park. That's what these guys are doing. They're just like Eric Cartman.
Yeah, but it didn't turn out well for Eric either. Like, eventually he didn't have anybody to play with, and there wasn't anything left. And that's the thing, though, is that it doesn't end. Like, they get people from, the hiking communities and the biking communities and the rest of them to sign on saying, yeah, motorized access is the worst, so close it off to that. So then they close the trail that for motorized access, and then a couple years later they come back and say, well, now we can't have bikes on there either, because any kind of rubber tread on the ground is not going to be good. And a couple years after that, they're like, well, we can't have hikers there either, because we can't have them disturbing the fauna. And it's a never ending thing. And they're just trying to nip at the edges to get as much as they can. Exactly. So there you go, Jason. I was hoping this was going to be a happier episode for you, because we actually have decent news with this particular forest plan. So
I'm super happy that the outlook is good. It's just the part that fires me up is the things that got us to this point right now. And in my opinion, just from my experiences of being around for so long, is the people who bring these issues up, 99% of the time, they've never even experienced it or even have any thought in their mind to go experience it. It's just something that they want to argue about. And it just drives me nuts.
There's a lot of that, too. I think there's a lot of the keyboards that people that don't necessarily know what it is they're protesting against when they fire that letter off, because the Sierra Club told them to do so, but they fire it off. And, I know one of the things that I do when I'd make a statement, because I will make comments on in areas that I have not been to before. There's been a lot of stuff in Idaho lately, but I make sure to, kind of lay that out at the beginning. And I don't think the same kind of level of transparency is there. I just don't think these folks have been there as much, and they don't want to go there. It's they're more about the argument than I think than the actual science behind it.
Hey JD, you want to go ahead and mute me? I'm cooking dinner too. I got like 75 people in my house, so while I'm doing
good Lord.
Cooking
dinner too. So. All right, well, go ahead.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ! All right. All right. So what else? What else we want to chat about with regards to the GMOG? I mean, that feels like it's a win. I want to put in air quotes around that so far. Like, I don't feel like it's good. There's nothing real terrible coming down the pike. When it comes to that one, we have the Pike San Isabel one coming up. Is that this year?
There's not a date yet for it. And I don't know when that one will actually kick off. Honestly, our litigation may delay it a little bit. I mean, because we've got some outstanding issues with their last decision, but that one will be coming down the pipe because it's nearly as old as the GMUG one. I could see a lot of issues in that one because the original forest plan from 84 has a lot of errors in it, where we have motorized roads that date back to late 1800s from mining that were done incorrectly on that original map that are shown in non-motorized areas. And frankly, that's the technicality the groups used for the original 2015 lawsuit and settlement agreement that made us go back and redo all of the travel management. As they said, the PSI was in violation of their own forest plan because they were not managing for the non-motorized zones and they were allowing motorized recreation to be in there. So those mapping errors and those technicalities are what caused us to go through the travel management in the first place. So they still exist. They're still there. Those roads and trails are still there. Twin Cone is still there. Lost Canyon is still there. Some of the roads that are very popular here in Colorado are still technically in a 3A, which is a non-motorized zone. So there's going to be a lot of fighting over that. There's going to be a lot of comments, and it's going to be very much contested, I think, more than the GMUG plan turned out to be.
Well, I think you can actually pin some names to it. So you can pin, and Tin Cup, I think, is going to be probably one of the biggest ones, if not the biggest one that gets the most comments, just because there's so many people that knew the trail before it got cut off. And for you guys that I don't know, I'm guessing none of you guys have ever been on that trail before. I never made it up that trail before it was closed. But it used to go to, it's one of the summits in that area. It went up pretty tall, didn't it?
Twin Cone. So it went
not Tin Cup. Yeah.
Yeah. So it went to the summit of North Twin Cone Peak. Yeah.
Okay. All the way to the very top. So yeah, that one was a real popular one. And there was a lot of anger when it was first closed off, and, that'll probably generate a lot of feedback. So, and plus I think, you know, the Pike National Forest is a lot closer to the general public. And there's a higher population of people, as you're just going to get the regular, you know, recreational users on the weekends that go up there with their ATVs.
Yep.
So, all right. So with the GMUG one, I guess the biggest takeaway was the amount of, feedback and information that the off-road community really, you know, fed back into this. We talked about the mapping stuff. It's one of the reasons why, you know, the Trails Off-Road stuff appealed to me when I started doing it, was because the accuracy of a lot of the maps and the information that I was getting out there was just not there. And because a lot of them were pulling it off of those old maps and, or just off of stuff that it was illegal. So I think going forward, it'd be a lot better if we could get a forest rangers and forest services that were more willing to work with us, especially like we talked about at the very beginning. We know these trails. We know where they're supposed to go. Like we know where they're not supposed to go. And if you talk to the right people, we can tell you where people aren't going that they shouldn't be going, and the rest of it too. We'll be, and there's a lot of us that are fully honest about that part of it too. So I think there's more to be said if we work with them. You know, I still want to be a little cautious. I was out this last weekend in the LaSalle Pass Puma Road area, and ran into a little over 150 ATVs in a row, and had a couple of them going off trail and causing general chaos, if you will. And right after them was a ranger following them, and I'm like, I can send you some video. And it took me a couple of days to send it over, because I'm just like, I really want to send this video to the ranger. And I'm like, I'd rather get, you know, some of these folks and that were responsible for that party group being out there taken care of. But it's just a err on the side of trying to keep it open. So err on the side of sharing the information with people that you, the rangers, if you see the rangers out there, tell them that kind of stuff. So, so Pike Sand as well. Do we have anything else that's going on here? I mean, I know we've kind of had a couple busy years with big forest plans. What's after those?
So nothing imminent. Eventually, okay, we'll go through travel management in the Rio Grande National Forest at some point. But again, that's not imminent. That's obviously less well known than the other two forests that we talked about. Some places off the beaten path for sure. We'll be involved in those, obviously, when that shows up. But there's nothing imminent on the calendar. I don't know.
That's good. I'd rather have...
This is a positive show, right? Like, I come on sometimes.
No, this is awesome. Okay. Yeah, because Jason will tell you. Jason gets angry when we talk about these things.
No,
so
I do, and I really...
And we should get angry. Yeah.
This is positive. Like I said before, is I only get upset for the reason why we got to this point. It's like, come on, you know, like... What do they call that? The something about quarterback, the freaking couch quarterback or whatever.
Armchair quarterback.
Yeah. You know, it's like, it's that. In my opinion, we get to these positions because somebody watched something on TV and got all upset.
Yeah.
Hang on. I'm about ready to get shot with a Nerf gun. Hey,
all right.
Go inside. Lily!
But I mean, that's...
You still got to... I'm paying for the electricity and heat. I'll be right in. I know you want to play. Well, I'll shoot you later. But yeah, it's just like that armchair quarterback thing is in my opinion, why we get to it. And it might not be in this case, but I feel like that happens a lot across anything in life. And it's like, you know what? Stay on your couch, okay? Like,
I think there's people out there
with the real knowledge.
Yeah, I think a lot of it to date has been that these groups have been a lot more organized than we have, and as a community. And so they've been, you know, quietly working at this shit for 40 years, 50 years. And we are now just getting to the, we're just getting to the place as a group where we're starting to be like, oh, well, we really need to pay attention to what's going on here and be part of this process to make sure that we're represented and we don't get 300 miles of trails closed in one area at a shot.
So with that, let me tell you another positive story that just happened. So at the end of last month, I was invited to talk at a leadership and development conference for the Forest Service. Ironically, their employees go to this conference and they get exposed to a whole bunch of different perspectives. They have volunteer groups come in and present a volunteer perspective. Like, we're a partner. Here's what we do. Here's how we work with the agency. Here's where we could work with the agency better. And the good, the bad, and the ugly, basically, right? So I got invited to do this as part of our volunteer work that we do in Colorado. And I showed up and I talked about some things and I talked about some stuff we could do better. And mapping errors were one of them. And I showed a specific example in my area where we found that private property was shown to be in the wrong location and a road crossed that private property. There's no record of easement for the public to cross that property. One, because it's not in the right place. But so the forest was going to stop the road at the edge of that private property, and that cut the end of the trail off. And like JD said, we'd have lost just shy of a mile, but it goes up to a really cool overlook, and it's basically the end destination for the entire trail.
It's usually the point, yeah.
Exactly. And going through county records, we found that it was in the wrong place. We documented everything specific, and I was presenting this at the meeting. And after I was done, I got some good questions. But after I was done, a lady who was sitting in the front row came and knelt next to me. And she said, hi. She stated her name and she said, I'm the GIS coordinator in the supervisor's office. I need all of your data so that we can start to fix some of these issues. And she typed her email on my phone. And we've been corresponding on that issue and a number of other ones. So thankfully, there's good people that still work there. They want to correct their data. They just need the people to help them that know it as well as we do on the ground. And now we're here. We have an established relationship. We commented on a lot of things so that the credibility is starting to snowball in a positive way.
Yeah, I think and that's one of the things that's been kind of cool is I've noticed that, you know, with some exceptions that we have talked about on this show specifically, the majority of the folks in the Forest Service and the BLM that I've worked with on a one-on-one basis seem to want to at least listen to us and try to figure out what it is that motivates us or even in particular case, like what it is we're trying to say, like, hey, this information is actually incorrect. This data is wrong. And we're telling you that we can get you that correct information. We'll do the work for you. Like we're not even asking you to pay us, which is, you know, that should be a government, like number free government work. Hell yeah.
I don't want to do government work anymore.
Yeah, but you're going to have to start mapping stuff and you have to start mapping stuff out by you, Jason.
Yeah. Now, hey, you know what though? Like I get pretty passionate about the mapping thing just because, you know, like for those who don't know, I was on submarines once. Like my navigator. So we have to be pretty accurate. But yeah, those, it goes all back to the accuracy of them. And I'm assuming from the start of this, somebody probably brought this up and said, hey, here's some data points. And somebody behind a desk who has no idea about scales, different things like that on a map, they probably threw this down on maybe the smallest scale, the largest picture you can look at, which then you're inaccurate as hell.
Yeah.
So if they don't have that knowledge, yeah, everything is probably being put in front of people to say, hey, these are why these things are wrong. From the start, they're looking at inaccurate stuff. So,
yeah,
you know, like you said, Marcus, is the more and more people know that we're out there and we're asking to get these things fixed, there are people out there willing to fix them. We just need to find them.
Yeah,
that's right.
So be friendly with your local ranger and your local GIS person. If you don't know your GIS person, try to find out who they are. Be nice to them. So I only have one last question for you, Marcus. I read the article, and I think we talked about, I don't know if we talked about the 14er access stuff the last time you were here. Did we talk about that?
We just touched on it.
Okay. There's now a bill in front of Polis. I'm assuming he's going to sign it, that basically gives some liability protection for public access through private land. So if you've got a trail to, this all came about because of a mountain here, a 14er here that had part of its trail that basically went over the corner of somebody's property. And over the years, the person had various issues and concerns about liability. And so eventually they tried to shut the trail down themselves, at least by shutting down their portion of the trail. So after all of this went down over the last couple of years, they introduced a bill, and I did not read the text of that bill. Is that just hiking trails? Is that just kind of a blanket thing? Do you know if that applies to anything that we might encounter in the future? Like Crystal Mill comes to mind.
Yeah. And this is a good question. So the coalition of groups that was trying to get this passed, or some version of this bill passed, is called the CRUS Coalition. So CRUS. I don't remember exactly what the acronym stands for, but it was a coalition of recreation groups that were running into private property issues in Colorado. And I'll expand upon that in a minute. But the director of CRUS Coalition contacted me and asked us to sign on to this. And CORE is actually a supporter of this push to try and get some level of understanding and support from the state for private property owners, because they're worried about liability. And JD's exactly right. This mostly came from our popularity of summiting 14,000 foot peaks. And some of the entire mountains are owned by private individuals via mining claims. And some of those are very dangerous. And so in certain circumstances, incorrectly, the owners don't want to assume any liability for the public crossing their property. They could fall into an old mine shaft. There could be a collapse. There's, you know, artifacts strewn about. Somebody could step on a nail. I mean, there are real legitimate liability concerns of the public in droves climbing 14ers just traipsing across public property, and somebody has an accident, and boom, the owner's liable at that point. So that's where this started. Where we fit in is we see some of the same issues, and I don't necessarily think they're genuine concerns from property owners, but they'll say, well, this public road crosses my private property, so now I'm going to gate this because I don't want the public going across my private property. And this may be a tiny little claim that's 2 acres in a huge national forest, but the reason the road's there is because it provided access to the mining sites in the area. So then it crosses the claim. And JD can tell you we've lost a lot of access via these types of fights. So they wanted us to come on and as part of this group to tell our story and our side of the access fights that go on over private property. Now, I can personally tell you there are a lot of private property owners, they're not worried about liability at all, but they'll tell you that just so that they could put a gate up. They'll say, I don't want to accept the liability of the public driving across my private property. And that's just an excuse to get
it's a gate. It's an easy up. Way to shut down the discussion.
100% it is. However, I do think this is a step in the right direction because it's starting to publicize the problem. We're talking about it. And the public is starting to understand it. And now we have multiple recreation groups, not just people driving roads, that are starting to have issues with private property and crossing private property and a chunk of private property that has no buildings on it and nothing out in the middle of nowhere on top of a mountain that they technically would have to have permission to walk across. So it's an interesting dynamic that's going on in Colorado, and hopefully we can expand it to some level of protections if a property owner is allowing people to drive across there on a public road. Some of the original things they were putting in there are just really not realistic, where they're saying, well, a private property owner needs to post this sign and that sign, and there's a whole laundry list of things that they have to do, and there's mining claims all over the mountains here, and they're really remote, and property owners don't even live in the state. There's people in Hawaii, Alaska, all on the East Coast that own mining claims in Colorado that may never visit them. So the reality of a property owner going out there and having to do something to absolve their liability so the public can walk across there is a bit far-fetched, in my opinion, for reality. But the bill, the discussion, the private property issues are at least a step in the right direction to publicize the things that are happening.
Awesome. Yeah, I kind of feel like we've reached the place now where, as a community, we understand that we fought back, and we've talked about this before, Marcus. We fought back with trail cleanups and trail maintenance, and we still do all of those things, but the other half, or maybe 60% of the fight, is really with legal and courts and laws and fixing mapping data and all the rest of that crap.
That's right.
So all right. Well, I feel like we've taken up enough of your time at this point. So we'll run around. Do you have anything else that you want to add for that, for any of the stuff that we've talked about today, Marcus?
No, I just say I very much appreciate talking to all you guys. Thanks for always, you know, letting me come on and ramble about land use stuff and complex things and all of that. I'm very passionate about that, and I'm always happy to share that with you guys. And we put out a ton of information year round about issues and things that are coming up. And I know JD follows all of that, and he's very squared away on that. But anybody else that's ever listening or watching, if you care about public lands, you care about recreation, try to always be in the know.
Yep. Check out, if you're in Colorado, it's keeptrailsopen.com. I got that right this time. Awesome. I didn't say the other one. I don't even want to say it. So yeah, it's keeptrailsopen.com. And then we'll post the links to that, obviously, on the trailheadnetwork.com. And then also, like, yeah, Blue Ribbon Coalition, any of those land use issues. What'd you say, Jason?
Nothing. I was just laughing. The kids are in there.
All right. We got any other questions for Marcus, or anything else that you want to add?
No, it was great talking to you again, Marcus. Good to see you.
Thanks.
All right, Pope, Randy.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks for fighting the fight so that we can still be out there. It's awesome.
Cool. All right, well, Marcus, we'll do this again. Hopefully, maybe about a month and a half or so, and hopefully we'll have some more updates about stuff and another good news stories. We'll figure something out.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks, guys. We'll see y'all next time at the Trailhead.